I'm your daddy.
I can be smart when it's important.
I'm your daddy.
Welcome to Daddy Dailies, the podcast hosted by Not Your Daddy's Films. On a film set, dailies are sent out after a shoot day so you can see the work in progress. Daddy Dailies are conversations that go behind the scenes so you can see what work went into the process and be better armed to succeed in the industry. Daddy Dailies, hosted by Not Your Daddy's Films. Not Your Daddy's Films is a...
It's going great.
We're really killing it. Yeah. And by that, I mean me.
No, you're going great.
Not Your Daddy's Films is a community dedicated to leveling the playing field for women and non-binary folks in film and TV. We are not your old daddies. We are new and improved. I'm a daddy. You're a daddy. We're all daddies here.
Don't forget to click subscribe on whatever podcast app you're listening to us on. And let's get started.
I'm Carly.
And I'm Vika.
Two of the founders of Not Your Daddy's Films.
I'm so excited to introduce you to our first guest.
Oh my God. I'm so honored.
She has written on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, directed on Gordita Chronicles. She was on Forbes 30 Under 30. No big deal. Is the creator of the hit show Diary of a Future President on Disney Plus, and currently developing a reboot of Working Girl with Selena Gomez producing. Not to mention, she is a native Floridian who has an incredible singing voice. Alana, thank you so much for being here.
Oh my God, that was the best intro ever.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we had to have a fellow theater kid on. Carly and I both are.
We're in with family right now.
Yes. So Alana and I met through our mutual friend, her childhood bestie, and my friend from out here in LA, who, if I'm not mistaken, is one of the characters in Diary is based on.
Of course, yes. The best friend character, Sasha. So I would literally say to the girl who played Elena, the lead, I would be like, oh, my Sasha's coming to set. Like, my Sasha, that's what I would call Kelsey. My Sasha.
It makes me want to cry. That's so sweet.
I would say it to the girl playing Sasha, too. We have, like, pictures of the four of us together.
Wow. I mean, that's the perfect segue. Can you tell us a little bit about growing up in Florida and how you ended up pursuing this career writing for TV? Was that always the goal, or did you want to be president like the character on the show?
Neither. I wanted to be on Broadway. No, I feel like I had a similar sort of experience to a lot of millennials, a lot of people our age, and that, like, I didn't really know TV writing was a job. I would watch TV, but I wasn't like a TV or film like head. I was more of a reader. I read like a ton of books. Yeah. I would watch, like, you know, the classics like Boy Meets World and Lizzie McGuire. And But I wasn't like, I don't know, I just never really imagined it. And I remember, because I was also really into theater, so I remember thinking about, like, oh, do I want to, like, write plays? But I loved books so much. So I was always just like, I don't know. When you write plays or movies, you can't describe the way the rain is falling on the windowsill. Like, that was my, like, bratty 12-year-old, like, I want to be able to describe the rain, not just write, it rains. So I just didn't really know it was a thing or think that it was something that I would be good at, honestly. But theater, as it does, led me there. I was always kind of writing, like, little stories and stuff like that. And then I went to Northwestern University for theater, and it was at Northwestern I took my first playwriting class. I loved it, even though you can describe the rain. You know what, guys? You can. I loved it. I fell in love. I took a 10-minute play class. I submitted a 10-minute play to a festival. I got in. I directed the play. I ended up co-running the festival with friends. Like, it's still going, which makes me very emotional.
Amazing. What's it called?
It's called the Tentative Play Festival. we were called Pretend Productions with the 10 in all caps, but it's more of a visual joke. So it's through, like, a student theater group I was on that does primarily student written work. So it's Vertigo Productions Presents the 10-Minute Play Festival.
You know what? It tells you what it is.
Yeah. And that's what I learned from my play. Exactly. The title of the thing should say what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
So I fell in love with playwriting, and then I ended up getting into this program called Creative Writing for the Media, where we were on the quarter system. Every quarter you did a different, like, kind of writing. So you did feature film, short film, playwriting.
Oh, that's very cool.
And I fall of senior year, I'd already dropped acting. I'd already kind of like realized that writing was the top of my priority list, and acting, I just didn't go see my teacher to talk about my role as Olga in Three Sisters as much as the other sisters.
This is so niche, like just for us.
I know. I'm literally like looking right at you, making like laser eyes at them. And fall senior year, I took, it was TV writing in the program, and I fell in love with it. It was like all the things that I was starting to love about film and all the things I've already loved about theater, how character driven it is, the collaboration. And I just was, and I saw like a path, like I saw a job, I saw a future. And my type A brain liked that.
Yeah.
That was sort of it. I wrote a girl's spec, and that was the first thing I ever wrote.
That's so cool. So then you moved out to LA, or did you go to New York first?
I went to New York for like 5 minutes because I didn't know. I knew LA was a hub, but I still wanted to do theater and film also. And I thought that New York had it all, which it does. But I really wanted an entry level job, which I know I'll get into later, in TV. Like I wanted to be making my living off of doing something that helped me with the thing I wanted to do with writing.
Right. Yeah.
And I could not find that in New York. There's so few writers' rooms. There's late night. There's like a few things. I ended up working in non-scripted, which is, it was lovely, but it was the opposite. It's right, non-scripted. Right.
Yeah.
And so I ended up, and when you, in New York, I found when I said like, I want to, you know, be a support staff in a writer's room, or I want, when I sort of started learning what that was, people, I'd kind of get like a, good luck.
Oh.
Because it was such slim pickings out there. And then I visited friends in LA I'd never been. And I said that to people and they would be like, oh, so give me, like, send me your resume. Like, I'm on Outlander and they might be looking for a PA. Like, it just felt so reachable.
Yeah, that's so nice.
So I moved. I didn't even make it a year in New York. Not make it. You can, you don't have to quantify it as that.
Either you could make it anywhere.
And I didn't make it there.
No, but she made it here, folks.
That's very kind.
Shirley
Hale. Yeah, that's actually perfect. Because you were talking about entry-level jobs.
Yes.
And I think that something that I've learned through this Not Your Daddy's Film community is how many people are like, okay, I want to make a film, or I want to work in television, just like you when you had been talking in New York, like I want to be a support staff in a writer's room, and mm-hmm. learning what that job is not always like cut and dry. It's not like,
no,
I saw a job description somewhere that was like, this is like entry level for television. You know what like a director does kind of loosely, but you mm-hmm. don't really know what a creator or showrunner really means. So that first job being support staff in a writer's room, like what does that mean? And like what was your job and how did that lead to, you know, to this work?
I'm just saying, not to be like, this is an amazing, I'm saying amazing things, but I just wish I had listened to a podcast where they asked the question when I was 22. Huh. Like I just, there's so much I didn't know and so much that wasn't being talked about and that you had to kind of like find in these like secret hidden ways. So this, thank you for what you're doing, first of all.
Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure. My first job wasn't a traditional support staff in a writer's room. But I'll like briefly talk about it. It was on a show that was an animated sketch show on Comedy Central. So it was submission based. So it wasn't a traditional writer's room. I was in charge of like reading and culling submissions, me and my counterpart. So we would be like, we would read, we'd be like, here are our favorites from the day. We would take notes and like the sessions where the higher ups would, you know, be like, this will fill this episode. So it was kind of an education in a totally other way. And I'm going to just, because I know people are probably listening to this for advice, just give a word of advice, like take that job, even if it's not 100% the thing. Like I wasn't a writer's PA on a comedy, which is, you know, because I'm mostly write comedy and that's what I was excited about. It was, you know, it was a sketch show. It was, the audience was not, it wasn't the kind of show that I would normally watch. It was, the people were awesome though. And I like, got experience. I was called a script PA. I learned a ton. I got to read all this comedy. I got to see what was landing and what was didn't. Even if it wasn't like 100% my taste, it was still an education. I loved who I worked with. I still keep in touch with a few of them to this day. And then that job directly led me, like having that experience, to my first support staff job as an executive producer's assistant on the show Rain on the CW.
I was watching.
Wow. Season 3. I was in charge of the writer's Twitter, among other things. So that was where I got my like education of what a writer's room support staff looks like. And how, I didn't even know EP assistant was like a job, because certain shows have not just a showrunner. They have other upper level writers who are, they have the budget to give them assistance. So I was assisting this writing team that had just come off a deal at a different studio and they needed an assistant. And so I got to basically learn from them, but also your sort of community. There was a showrunner's assistant. I would cover her desk sometimes. There was a script coordinator. Sometimes I had to get something out. There was a PA more often than I would have liked. I had to go get like coffee and, you know, because you're kind of a utility player. If you are on support staff and you sort of, that's part of the gig, you have to be like game and excited and I'm here. And then the joy was when the writer's assistant would need somebody to take notes in the room and I would do that. And I just kind of like really got an education. And that show also, like, it's an hour long period drama. It's not something that I've ever written before. I learned everything. I learned so much. I learned about notes calls and who's on those calls and, like, you know, what, how writers talk to executives and how they take the notes. And I would watch cuts, and I was thankfully had bosses where I could give thoughts on things, and I could, I just saw an entire season, I think 16 episode season from start to finish from the ground up. And it was, I learned so much.
I think getting to hone your voice like that must have been so valuable, because you're being a fly on the wall is like invaluable, but also getting to be like, okay, I think this, and then having that validated or hearing like, oh, that's a great point, but this is what we're looking at like 3 episodes from now. Like,
yeah.
It's that kind of thing that when you're sitting at home and you're like, I want to write a movie or I want to write a TV show, you're not necessarily thinking about all those parts. And at least for me, and I don't want to speak for you,
no.
Collaboration is so key.
And how the process, like something I've really learned, I learned from my co-showrunner on my show, is like trusting the process. And that lesson started as a support staff, because you're seeing, you can't agonize over every single comma. You can't agonize over, because there are like a billion steps after that. And you really have to trust that and trust the people giving you notes. Actually, can I tell a very, very, very quick funny story?
Oh, God, we love funny.
My bosses, the first time they asked me to give notes on a cut, I was so excited because it was sort of like the first, you know, one of the first creative things they'd asked me to do. And I was living with my friend Tracy at the time, and I was texting her that I was going to be home a little late because I was giving notes on this cut. And I was like, hey, like, okay, I'm going to be home later. Like, they asked me to give notes. And then I texted her, like, they asked me to give notes and I'm so nervy. That's what I said, because I really wanted to do a good job. And folks, I sent that text to my bosses. So that's a nice way to break the ice. I was horrified. I was like,
so sweet, though.
That's the thing. Like, whenever I tell this story, people are like, that's like the nicest thing. And they were like, OK, like, we'll send the notes when you have it. Like, they just were so, but it was.
They weren't like, but what's nervy?
Yeah. Also, they maybe didn't. They were like, this is another language she's speaking. Yeah. So, yeah, I was really lucky to have bosses that like valued my opinion. And I would stay, whenever they would stay late, I would stay late, because this was, God, I feel 100. But I would, one of the things I would have to do is drop off physical copies of scripts and outlines to executives' doorsteps of their literal homes. I know, isn't that crazy? And sometimes that wouldn't be till like late at night, but it was cool being like I would read every version and I would see, like, even if I wasn't being directly asked for feedback, I was like reading and learning and like, okay, so like they're here solving this, like, you know, act 3 thing, and it takes till like, why did that take till 10 p.m. and what did they do to it? And it was awesome.
Yeah, seeing those notes that I also work in a writer's room, and I think a lot, I can echo a lot of what you're saying. And the thing that's so key to me that I wish everybody said is that take the job. Like,
yeah,
if it's not exactly what you think you want to do. I work on a cop procedural. I do stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did not expect that to be my job.
Procedurals are hilarious.
Yes. My first script, I tried to put a joke in there, and the note I got was, someone just died. Weird time for a joke. I was like, cool, 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 cool. And I think that's true. It's like getting, when you're in these support staff positions, which like, I think with the unionization of some of these jobs, the pay is a lot better, but it's not glamorous. You're not making a ton of money, but you really are learning so much. And I think that at least in theater school, there's this idea that you should, take a job unrelated to the field you want to be in, waitress or whatever, which is no knock on waitressing or bartending, but
I think that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. And if you can do something that is adjacent to, where you can learn and keep that creativity going, I think it's just
really fantastic. And unless you're really, really lucky, you don't need to be that available for auditions.
Right. No, I mean, but you learn so much. And I think that, like, if you are lucky and if you are smart, then you also have a life outside of work. And that is how you can get inspiration. And like, people are always like, how do you deal with writer's block? And I'm like, shut the computer and like, go do something. But I remember I had a professor once in the business of the business day. Then this was like a theater class for writing. And I remember like I was like, I need to know how to make a living in this. Like, it was sort of before I figured out I wanted to do TV writing, and I was taking copious notes. And one of the things the professor said was like, the pieces of advice that I have in a moleskin somewhere was like, work in a coat check. There are interesting people there.
What?
And I just was like, I just wish that sort of romanticization of these, like, again, no shade to coat checks.
No.
And yeah. There are interesting people, but like, I wish that there had been a more practical guide.
Yeah.
Because I literally was like, but I want to be a writer. Like, what can get me? Am I working at a coat check of a film set? Like, so I just think it's so true. And everyone's path is so different. I know a ton of amazing, amazing artists that started off in a completely different way I did and did service industry jobs. And that's awesome. But I think if you want to get an education, the support staff or getting, and even if it's not on a show, working at a production company, working for a studio, for a network, for a producer, for a manager, for an agent, like, they're not necessarily the most glamorous on paper, but you will learn and you will have, and you will know where the next job, you will hear of. After Rain, every single job I got was based on a job, like a person I knew from the job before.
So, yeah, I think like we hear from people in our community like that they think networking is kind of gross. And I'm like, the idea of schmoozing someone to get what you want is gross, but the idea of making friends and then working with people you like and respect is not gross.
Yeah, it depends who's networking.
Yeah.
Us networking is delightful.
Yeah, we are great at it.
But like, it makes you up and down.
Yeah, it's making friends. It's like, you know, it's, I really love making connections and getting to know people. Carly and I just did it today.
Hey, just only a few moments ago.
Only a few moments ago. And so a cynic could call that networking. And I call it making friends.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I don't think really anybody in this room could call themselves a cynic.
Yeah, no. I'm still like, we're in Hollywood.
Our producer, Robert, is raising his hand. We needed one naysayer.
That's true.
So true. That's like why we wanted to make this, is because just so much of this information is not available.
Yeah.
If we want more women, if we want more of anything in this industry, like, we have to give the beginning information.
Yes.
And make it easy to understand, accessible, and just like not weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, be weird in your art, not weird in
and how you communicate.
Yeah. With people.
We're dropping some gems here.
Yeah, you guys.
All of the important things. So you've gone from all these different types of jobs. Can you talk a little bit about how you went from staff writer to showrunner creator?
I absolutely can. It was not a transition I thought I would ever make. Not that quickly.
No.
She
did it fast, guys.
I
go fast.
Staff writer to showrunner is you skip all of the other levels.
Maybe we should talk about the levels. What are the levels?
I would love to talk about the levels. So,
okay.
So staff writer is sort of like entry level writer, meaning but when you're an assistant, you're like overqualified. Let's be real. Everyone who works these jobs is overqualified. Staff writer just means it's sort of like the first rung on the ladder. And then after that is story editor. And this basically just means it's what your title is if you ever see in the credits of shows. There's some that are in the beginning and some that are at the end, and it's based on how much you get paid. Mm-hmm. So the higher your level is, the more you get paid. So staff writers first. And also, I mean, I think in the olden days, I think that there's like the names had a reason, like the story editor is the person who, but in my experience, it's just sort of,
you know, mine as well.
Yeah, yeah. Writers all sort of pitch in and.
They don't. Once you get to those upper level, like producer level writers, they might be giving notes or handling some other like posts.
Yeah.
But it really depends.
But like a story editor versus a staff writer is not like, you're not going to be like, oh, finally, like I've gotten the bump and I can do this extra thing.
No.
Unless your showrunner is like hierarchical.
You can buy a nicer car.
Yeah. Yeah. You can buy a nicer car. So it's staff writer, story editor, executive story editor, co-producer. Producer,
yeah,
and then supervising producer, co-executive producer, executive producer, That's it.
I think we just want a challenge.
I want the bells to ring.
Beautiful, you guys.
So yeah, when you get to like co-EP, EP, I mean, producer level writer is a phrase for a reason because it generally means that you like have the experience. You've maybe, I mean, things are, this industry is in such a weird place. And one of the things that's happened is lower level writers aren't getting as much opportunity to be on set to produce their episodes. Like Biga, you producing your episode of SWAT is like really an incredible experience. I think I've talked to you about this. Like it's just because a lot of times assistants or lower level writers are, they're shooting in Vancouver and they don't pay for the assistants to fly out there. And so it's just like one writer. I mean, for my show, I had to, I got on set writers. I like fought for it. I asked for it. It wasn't really a fight. I asked for it. They gave it to me. But it was, I had two for season one, three for season two, but one was a teen. Like, and they weren't necessarily the ones from the room because their contracts were only 20 weeks because that was writing. So it's, I think in the olden days, it was like producer level writers like have that experience. But what we're finding is, and this is one of the things we struck for, and one of the things I think we got a good, like things I think will change for the better. There's more now standards of who can be on, of like you need to have a certain amount. A writer should be on set more. But yes, it's like, we need set experience, and that is, I think, in network TV days, what dictated the levels as well.
So when you were a staff writer, did you get that on-set experience?
I was so lucky I did. Right. And that, I think if I hadn't gotten it, I could not have been a successful creator slash showrunner.
And did you have to ask for it? Or
no, I was on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend as a staff writer, and we shot, you know, 20 feet from the writer's room. We shot in L.A., and everybody got to produce their episodes. And so I was in my first episode, I was an assistant. I had an EP on set with me, sort of like, it was so, Michael Hitchcock, shout out, most amazing, amazing writer, actor, person. And he just like sat with me and mentored me through the entire process. Like, this is what we're doing here. And then when he would like, you know, leave, I was on set on my own and I would produce it. And then after I was promoted to staff writer, I had two more episodes that I wrote on my own. And so by the end, I was, you know, I didn't need a mentor on set. And I was also like in the editing bay and helping to give notes. And I was there for the beginning, from the beginning to the end of the process, which was invaluable. But that wasn't the question. What was the question? Oh, the jump.
Yeah.
So I did not expect, I was really scared because I thought it happened to me too early. I thought it was like a cosmic like glitch. But that was the thing I like didn't say out loud to anybody because I was like, if I say that out loud, they'll take it away. I'm more anxiety then. But I was so like, oh, my God, like this is not, I'm not ready for this. This is so scary. And what I found was, I was ready for it. It was really, it was like a really, I'm so thankful for so many reasons my show got a season two. But one of those reasons was that I got to sort of start and end a season with that recognition and fullness and like completion and like self-love of like, this happened to me at the right time because that's when it happened to me. And like, I can do it. And the things I don't know, I will ask, and I will surround myself with people who will buoy me and who will guide me, and I can do this. Season one, I did not run it. I was an EP and a creator, but I was on the ground. Like I was there every day. I was like essentially, you know, the right hand. The showrunner even would say, like, you and I are like doing this together, which is very kind. She very much let it, you know, be mine. And then season two, I co-ran it with a different co-showrunner, and it was COVID. It was like
so many obstacles.
It was ever. I mean, we shot pre-vaccine. We shot October 2020. We were one of the first shows back. They were like, let's see if this works.
And lucked you in this global pandemic.
But it was the kind of thing where I realized not only did I like know what I was doing on like a, you know, technical level, I realized that a lot of the things that I was maybe like personality traits of mine that were just sort of instinctual were the things that made me like a pretty good leader.
Yeah.
Like being gracious,
having these qualities of leadership. And I think knowing you a little bit, like,
yeah,
very thoughtful, and you like just thinking about other people, I think like can lend itself to being a great manager.
Well, and that's, I unfortunately there's a hit. There's not everyone in this position is gracious, is kind. Like I would walk onto a set. This is, for example, that like, you know, the art decorator and set, art designer and set decorator had like done like to see like, you know, Elena's room for the first time. That kind of thing I will never get over. Like, I'm saying it right now for posterity. Like, I will be, God willing, I'm running shows in my 60s and 70s, and it will always be a meaningful moment to see your words come to life. I walked on the set. The first things I said were like how amazing it was and the things that I loved about it. And oh my God, this is incredible. Like, you felt da 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 da. And then, you know, I had like five or six thoughts, and you give those thoughts. But like, leading with kindness is not something I thought was like, that's not a given. Not everybody does that. And I would have people that I worked that, you know, on like department heads and stuff being like, I've never worked with like a showrunner who is. And I was like, it was just like natural to me. And I think it's like, I think we think when we're in these professional positions, especially as women, we have to like be, you know, this is a very nice set, and like be joyful, be excited, be grateful, and like, you know, passionate, because it shows and it makes the people that work for you want to do that too and be that too. And it like inspires that in them.
They're working so hard on every detail. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's okay to come in and be kind.
It's, I literally can't imagine doing anything else. And I've heard horror stories about showrunners who are like nightmares in that area. And I sort of realized, like, not only do I know what I'm doing and not only am I growing as I'm doing this, but I also, the things in me that are in, I think, so many of us are like sort of my superpowers also.
Yeah, I think sometimes people look at a job that seems like, you know, how you had the reaction of like, oh, this is happening too fast.
Yeah.
You like, I would imagine like if I was like, OK, I sold my show and I'm getting to do it tomorrow, I'd be like, wait, but I thought that I would have to be a different version of myself.
Yeah.
And
guess what, babe?
Yeah. And I think that that's actually so great because, you know, I listen to so many podcasts, which is why I'm so happy we're doing one. And I'm like, I hear people talk about like whether they are CEOs or they're actors or what have it, you talk about their naivete being such a gift because you don't know what you don't know. And that can lead to confidence. For me, that leads to a lot of anxiety, but it also
the same.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, and I think I try to channel that. Now I'm just like, I'm developing. I have a deal at CBS. I have some features. When I sold Diary, I didn't know anything. I wrote it on spec. I wrote it because I didn't know what Disney Plus was. I wasn't targeting YA. I wasn't like trying to figure out what the market was missing. I wrote a story from my heart about something I wanted to see, and that is what was picked up to series. So now that like I've had that experience and I'm in development, like I really try to channel that because it's so easy to just be like, well, what are the mandates and what do people want? And like, you know, those are helpful to a point, but like at the end of the day, like the shows that are good and the shows that people care about were not written because of a mandate. They're written because they were someone cared about their story and told it. So I try to channel, like channeling naivete is, I think, a piece of advice too.
No, I think that's really beautiful. And I think the idea that writing from your heart and like why we go into art or why we go to theater school when it's not the most practical thing, or even if you didn't go to theater school, just like, oh, I love to do pottery. And is it practical? I don't know, but it makes me feel good. And then we sometimes lose that when the money-making element comes into it and where it's like, okay, like, where's the gap in the market? Where can I make something that will make me millions of dollars? And it's just like, you might be successful. That, like, good for you. Great. But are you going to be happy?
Right. And people can like tell. I mean, like, I've read so much and you can kind of tell when someone is writing. I can't speak for pottery, but I'm sure you can tell. I'm sure you can tell with ceramics as well. But you can tell when people are not writing with their voice, when people are writing like to be like, oh, like I hear this is selling, or like you can just tell, like it just doesn't like sing. It's just not as. So I honestly think if you're gonna be cynical, be cynical in the way where like, hey guys, it'll get you more success if you actually write from the heart. Like if being happy isn't enough, which it should be.
Yeah.
Look at it like the most successful people are the people who have something to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what you said earlier about like if someone asks you about writer's block, you're like, shut your computer and experience life. Like the good piece of advice your teacher gave you with the coat check thing is like, just to observe people.
Yes, yes.
Because I think well, only you need to take a job to do that. You can just go out.
That's where. Yes, exactly.
But yeah, so like you're both right in that, no, go do something that is exciting to you, but also take in the world around you because that's going to make like the best.
Yeah, you have to live a life. You have to have stories to tell. You know, you have to at least see them.
Yeah. You know, I think also us coming out of theater school, it was so much like, this is what you do. Then you do this. And it's like you work until you get on Broadway or you do whatever. And there's no time for anything else. But then what is the point?
Right. And who are you? Like, because at the end of the day, like, people are hiring you, like, yes, your talent. And yes, there is luck. It's also like, do you want to hang out with that person?
Yeah.
And it's hours. It's hours. It's like, do I want this person like across the table for me for 8 hours a day? You know what I mean? Yeah. On a set with me for 12 hours a day. And if you are like a robot workhorse, people don't want to hang out with a robot workhorse. They want to hang out. I was just telling this story, I think at like a Q&A or something. A panel I did for Queer 26. Check it out. When I was working on Rain, you know, they're always like, make friends with the writers and be like, make your connections. And it's like, you know, so you're in the kitchen and you're making your little coffee and you're like, oh, how was your weekend? I remember like one of the moments that I was like, oh, we're connecting was that someone said, what are you doing this weekend? And I said, I'm going to Santa Barbara. And people love Santa Barbara. People will talk about Santa Barbara. People are like, you should go here and you should go here and da da da. And then I went to Santa Barbara and then I got back and they were like, how was Santa Barbara? Like I was like trying to, you know, like work in my creative writing for the media certificate or whatever. And what they cared was what I did that weekend because they could relate to it. And we could talk about the restaurants we ate at in Santa Barbara. Like it was a turning. I was like, oh, like they just want to hang.
They do. Having a good hang.
Yeah.
It's like you can't necessarily put that on your resume, but it is great.
And yes.
Similarly, I was trying to like on my first show, I knew absolutely nothing. I was like, how did they get this job? I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And then at lunch, people would chit chat. And I was so scared to say I liked anything.
Oh.
Like, what are you watching? What are you reading? And I feel like, yeah, I watched it. What did you think? You know, like,
right.
As if there was a right answer to my taste. And so, like, don't do what I did. You know, I learned that, like, oh, having a personality is way more interesting.
And that's what, like, sticks out. Yeah. Like, the time that I opened up to he was then a staff writer on Rain, about how, like, oh, I really have enjoyed working on this show, but, like, comedy is, you know, I'm...
Right.
A week later, he was like, his now wife, my girlfriend, her boss at Brooklyn Nine-Nine is going to go do a show and needs an assistant. And that ended up being my next job.
How cool.
So like saying things about yourself and your taste actually could help you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so when you're talking about being on set and like people that you chose with your showrunner the first season, but like you also chose great people who you could trust. So
yes.
I think the advice that you get to trust is also like you're interviewing these people and like, do they align with your vision and just like being a good hang, like all those levels are really important. Did you instinctually know that? Or did you have like, you know, like say your showrunner on Crazy Ex give you advice or, you know, when you were going into it?
I think honestly, the best thing to do when you are hiring people and know this as somebody being hired as well is vet to death. Like anyone can give a good interview, unfortunately. You know,
this one.
Yeah, no, I'm giving a good interview, but I'm also amazing. anyone can give a good interview. You really have to talk to people that they worked with. And that doesn't have to be like necessarily like their boss, like the showrunner. I talked to like, the only person I could, you know, had a connection to was like a support staff on the show. Like that's helpful information. How do they treat the support staff? Like talk to anybody they worked with. I would try to get at least two for everybody I hired, writers and directors. Like just a conversation, like either if I got like a thing, like an email that's like, they're amazing, great. Or like a phone call where we like went into it and I'm asked to do it for people. It's so, because at the end of the day, it really is about like who can, it's a relationship business. It's a business of knowing people and hanging out with people. And once you sort of go through the hoops of like, okay, you're qualified. You have a good writing sample. You gave a good interview. I liked your directing reel or you have the experience I like. Then it's just like, is this person a good person? You know? And I would just like I was so 2020, like the rest of the world was like making sourdough. I was just like calling like every single, I was like, how is this person as a director? This isn't in our questions, but I'm wondering, like, when you're looking at a director's reel or you're looking at a writer sample for like either to collaborate with or hire, is there something that sticks out? It sounds like authenticity. Is there other stuff that you're like, oh, this feels like a vibes with me and, you know, what I like?
I think when you are, if you're meeting to staff on a show, like having passion for the show and like coming in with, again, like when, if you are the creator of something or the showrunner of something, chances are pretty high that you have like a significant level of passion for it. So if someone comes in and is also passionate about that and you feel like you can talk to them about it, and even like, I'm not saying come in with like 10 ideas of like, in this season, she'll, you know, go to horseback riding camp.
I like it.
But like, you know, because you also have to read the room. And like, if I say like, do you have ideas? Sure. But it's more just like, can I talk to you about it? Like, do I get excited talking to you? Like, not just about, you know, oh my God, like traffic was crazy, but like, why did you like the show and what stuck out to you? And like, can I build off? Can we like have a conversation? But like a passionate conversation, because you want people, especially, I mean, hopefully we're past these for, you know, as the norm, but these Zoom rooms that are so draining. And so in a time that was so miserable, you really like having writers who were passionate and wanted to laugh and were excited about coming to work every day was a godsend for, and it's a showrunner. It's a showrunner's dream come true, because you don't feel like you're carrying the boulder on your own. So I would say like, go in and make it clear you're passionate, but also make it clear that like, you're going to put in the work, like you're going to help carry the boulder. It's a boulder. And you're looking for people to help you carry it. You're looking for really smart, strong, I'm going with the metaphor, but really smart, like good hangs to carry that boulder with you, because it's a long journey and it's a heavy boulder.
Yeah.
Well, and also, so we've talked a lot about, you know, having your own authentic voice, but when you are hiring people or when you're part of a writer's room, how do you, I ask this because this is like not really my side of it, but how do you keep your own authentic voice when writing on a show for someone else?
That's a great, great question. I mean, Vika, you should talk about this too, because you are a stand-up comedy writing on a stand-up comic. I think that if you have if it's a good fit, if it's symbiotic, you're hired because of your voice and because of your point of view. So that's not something that you should be like squashing. Like when I would hire, I would be like, you know, it's a show where there was like a coming out story with a teen boy. And there was a writer on there who is a mom and her son is queer. And you know what I mean? Like there's perspectives and points of view, and also like where people are from and their ethnicity. And if they're, you know, what gender they identify as, like you want, if someone's doing their job right, you're hiring people for their points of view. And I think on Crazy X, it's just like trusting that that is true. And because there is, you do have to paint with the showrunner's palette, like mm-hmm. when you're a staff writer when you're a staffed writer. And that's a skill. And that's a really like weird skill, because it's the opposite of what I'm saying. It's like you have to be authentic in your sample and you have to have a voice and you have to have a point of view. But at the end of the day, you are executing someone else's vision. And you are hired not just for your voice, but also because you can like take their vision and ideally elevate it. So I think trusting that you were brought on there for a reason and not trying to squash down the things, like I'm a Cuban American writer. I was on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I never felt like I was there as like a token. I felt like if anything, I was there as like, I was young. I mean, everyone was young, but I was like, I think I would be like, I wrote for like the millennial character a lot. I did a lot of like really niche musical theater jokes. Like I just leaned into like the things I was and not the things that like I expected as a staff writer, this, you know, mm-hmm. makeup to be, and trusting that. And, you know, while also it's like doing I'm such like a type A. It's like doing a homework assignment really well, where it's like you are executing a vision and you know the show, and it's like in your bones, and it's in your bones so well that you can put yourself in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's like the key, is like feel the show, know that like that, because if you're like, oh, I really like orange juice and I really need to have them spill orange juice in that scene, chances are you're not like in the show. You know what I mean? If you're thinking so like be in the show so much that you just pours out.
of orange juice. I don't know, like my
way, the metaphors are singing.
I
love it. No, I think though, like to, I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit. You write and you direct and you dance, but I think of it like choreography. I was never a technical dancer when I was a musical theater major, but I could sell the crap out of a dance. Like,
not. Oh, that's cool. That's a great, I love that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
to the style.
Yeah. You're
picking up the details.
Exactly. Like you choreograph, or for the directors out there, you're directing, say, a music video for an artist, and one artist is so different from another, and you still are infusing yourself with it. You're like kind of putting their vision through your lens, or when it comes to a dance, you're like doing the steps with your little sass on it, and you have to be uniform with the other dancers, but like you also can like have a little wink nod. What's the too much head tilt, Cassie?
That's exactly the kind of joke I would make in the Crazy Ex.
I mean, I think I just alienated the entire Not Your Daddy's film.
It's a chorus line. It's a chorus line. It's so good, you guys.
It's also the documentary is excellent.
Seen it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And if you haven't
completely lost you, we're about to get a little vulnerable, I think.
Oh. This is our favorite.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk about mental health.
Oh, thank God.
Our favorite topic. So working in this industry, obviously, is very complicated, very hard, a lot of long hours. How do you stay sane?
I don't. No, that I'm really glad you're asking that. This is all, again, I really wish I had this when I was coming up, and I'm glad I have it now. It's a crazy, crazy industry, and I think living your life is really important. I think people get really caught up in sort of the rat race of it all, and feel like they have to constantly be working, when in reality, I got my first agents who eventually, like, they're the ones who sent the script to Disney Plus. I had one sample. I had a one-act play that I'd originally written in college, and I had an essay. Mm-hmm. And it's like the people who were like, I can't go out. I have to work on my, it has to be a multicam, and then I have to work on my procedural, and then I have to work on my, I you know, was a person who wasn't like burned out. I also think therapy is really important. It's helped me a ton. There are a lot of options if it's not affordable. There's, you know, I can ask my therapist. We talk about them a lot because it's like it's a thing that always comes up, and she's very like passionate too about getting those resources out. Find me after. And I will say this. This is, I don't know if I've ever talked about this on a podcast. Vulny alert. I talk about it all the time in my life.
Are you nervy?
I'm nervy to be vulny. Oh, I texted that to my therapist. I got on anti-anxiety meds right before we started shooting season 2 of my show, and it changed my whole life. I'm on Prozac. I love it. It is the best. And meds are not necessarily for everybody. I feel like a commercial. Talk to your doctor. But it's true, though. I mean, just for those who aren't seeing us nod and are just listening.
I mean, I'm a sertraline. I'm like, this is generic Zoloft, baby.
Zoloft!
What's your Stein?
Yeah, I'm a Zoloft daddy.
I'm a Lexapro and a Wellbutrin.
Oh my God. Wait, this...
I love Lexapro. It changed my life.
I know so many people, Zoloft and Lexapro, who it's changed their lives. It's changed... It really is. And honestly, working on Crazy Ex was huge because it was a show that destigmatized mental health. And like my first episode was about like her getting a diagnosis and the song that won an Emmy was called Antidepressants Are So Not a Big Deal. And I didn't realize it like at the...
I loved it so much.
It's so good. And I... The first time someone brought up meds to me, a therapist was in college, and I just kind of like shut her down. And I was like, no! Because I thought it meant that I'd like failed at something. But I was telling Rachel Bloom this the other day, like seeing my heroes and people in that room who were on that, and then seeing that song, it like all helped me like to my journey. And I got on it, and like a lot of the things I was talking about earlier of like the voice in my head saying this came too early, and sort of like that spiraling of like, I'm not ready. Prozac helped quiet that. A lot of that,
yeah,
can be chemical. And it just, I had a therapist once tell me it makes you realize the size of things. And I think that it's perspective, and it's seeing the forest through the trees. And it's not like I'm 100% cured, and I still get anxious, and this career can be really tough and grueling, but I think I realize the size of things. I think I'm like, and it's a big thing that we would like, you know, our mantra, I don't know if we would say these words, but it's like me and my co-showrunner would say, we're not curing cancer. Like, we're making TV, we're telling stories, we're making people laugh if you're on a comedy. It cannot be, if you run a set like you're curing cancer, it's going to be a bad show. And B, like, no one's going to be happy. Yeah. And just like, we all got into this because it brings us some kind of joy, from the people who, you know, make the sets, to the people who are acting in the thing, to the people who are editing. And so if you don't, like, we could be doing something else that's more stable and less of a train wreck. So
yeah,
just have joy and do the things that you need to do to get it, and like, seek out help, and don't feel like it means you failed. It actually means you succeeded.
Yeah. But I think also, like, we can decide to run our set in this way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that makes a really impactful difference.
Yeah.
And like we already said, you know, being kind to the different department heads, et cetera, down the line, but deciding to like run things a different way is our responsibility now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Anjali Cabral. She's an actress. She was my acting teacher for many years.
I love her.
Yeah. She's such a lovely person. And she told, I think it was her Instagram bio for a while, but she said this when she was teaching us, that we play pretend for our jobs, and how lucky are we? You know, and I think that that is something I've always taken to heart. And the other thing she always said, which you've reiterated, is have a life.
Yeah.
Because it helps you be less precious with this thing, which helps you then be kinder, which helps you take care of yourself. And also, just to say it, like, we're all obviously like big fans of meds, but like Alana said, talk to your doctor.
Yeah.
And like, there are so many things you can do for yourself: journaling, exercise, just talking to friends. Sometimes I listen to a whole album just lying on the floor, and it's like lovely.
I love that.
You know?
Prioritize it. And I know self-care is like buzzy, especially in this town, but I think prioritizing it is really important, and whatever that means to you. And I think community, like, if you have one, honoring it. If you don't have one, seeking one. I'm sure that your guys' events is like, that is so huge for people. But having other people in this industry who are kind of going through it with you, I like don't know what I would do without my people and my friends. And whether it's like, oh my God, is this like, what should I say in this email? Or I'm having this like crisis with my reps. What do I do? It's like, you're not alone. And even if you're like, I don't know who to ask, like, I guarantee you can be like, hey, I have a random question for you. And that person will be there because they've probably been through it. Like, just like lean on people. You're not in this alone.
Yeah, man is an island. No daddy is an island.
No daddy's an island. No, really. I mean, that is like, we just have to talk about it openly and hold hands and be like, okay, we're going to figure it out together. Also, I have this dream that that every set has a therapist.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know what I mean? And it's required. It's not even like... I also think like elementary school should have it.
Yeah.
It should be required to work on your communication.
Yeah.
And I just think having it as like a required thing on set could be so helpful.
Well, and we know that there's the infrastructure and budget for prioritizing health, because we saw it with COVID.
Yeah.
And so we need to treat mental health as important as physical health. And just because we're not, you know, swabbing every other day, doesn't mean that we should just like use that money on billboards.
Yeah, right. And just because we are playing pretend doesn't mean that what we're doing is not real and long, hard and scary. You know, it's like, it's always a catch 22.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take us back to directing. You've gotten to direct on two different shows. Can you tell us about what preparation you had for that, and what you might tell other directors doing that for the first time?
Yeah, I'm like, you're asking all the questions, but like, I had to like come to in these like painful, like, no, not painful, but these journeys of like self-love and interest in myself. I had to kind of like psych myself up to even advocate for myself for directing. So the first show I directed on was my show. I did the second to last episode of season 2 of Diary. And I always wanted to direct, but it was like, there's so many boulders that I was like, I don't know. And then the COVID was happening, and my co-showrunner was very like honest with me. He was like, I want you to do this, but I want you to be set up to succeed. And we don't know what set is like in COVID. So like, I don't know if we should be advocating for that, because the last thing I would want is for you to get up there and like not be your best. And that, you know what I mean? Like, he really was looking out for me. He's a he's a daddy. He's an honorary daddy.
I mean, he's actually a daddy, but he's like he's a father.
But so I was like, OK, we're just going to hire like experienced directors. And one episode was we still didn't have a director for. And it was the ninth one. So that was never going to be me going in. And on the I sat down on the first day of set, like in Video Village, and I was like, what is this COVID world directing? And here's the thing. It was slower. We had to spit in cups, and there was like a lot of more fear of, you know, health stuff. But making a show is making a show. And I sat in that chair for 1 hour and I was like, oh, I can do this. But that was the kind of thing that, like, even just getting to that place, like, I have a friend, shout out to Alex Heller. She's an amazing feature that she wrote, directed, starred in called The Year Between. It's on Peacock. We had like a COVID distance hang at one point, and she's such like a filmmaker. And we were talking about it, and I was like, oh, no, I think I might want to direct. And she was like, direct. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I didn't go to film school. I don't know the names of like the cameras and the pans. And she was like, that doesn't matter. Like, you know the show and you're like, it's yours. And like, you can speak to it better than anybody. So it was like her and other friends. And then eventually my co-showrunner who pushed me to advocate for myself. I got it. And then I was the ninth episode. So I had 8 episodes to sort of like shadow while knowing that that was going to happen, and 10 from the season before. So I asked every director, like, what's your secret? Amazing directors. We're so lucky. Everyone, all the writers and directors, everyone on Diary was so incredible. Cast, crew, love them all. But I asked all of them, because I was like, again, it's like I take out my moleskin. I'm just like, I need to learn. And like, what's the secret? What's the thing I didn't learn in film school? What's the thing I didn't know? Like, I didn't read the books during the lockdown. And 8 out of 8 of them were like, well, the most important thing. And I like leaned in and they were like, is that you honor the story? And I was like, oh, that part, I wrote it. And I was just like,
I did it.
I was like, but truthfully, guys, is like, that is what you're hired to do. That is what you have to just like take the words on the page and make them come to life. And also being a good leader. Again, like all these things that I kind of intrinsically had that I was like, all I am is the girl who went to theater school. But like, I remember on the first day, someone was like, you're so good at working with actors. And I was like, well, yeah, that's what I've been doing my whole life.
Yeah.
But it's an inherent thing that you have, but not everyone does.
Right. And so I think that like, if you are somebody who believes that this is something that you could be good at, you probably are.
Sure.
And the technical stuff you can learn. The technical stuff is teachable. And then I went on and did a show that was not my own. So I did not write the story. But guess what? I still knew how to honor the story. I still could like tap into my leadership. And I got to like, Gordita Chronicles was so amazing. And we were in San Juan and it was just like such an incredible experience. And I sometimes didn't know the words for things. Guess who does know the words? The DP that is there to be with you and who wants to be involved and wants to collaborate. And I'm still like, I actually have a standing date with my first AD from my episode of Diary because I told him that once and he was like, I could teach you that in an afternoon. He was like, I'll come over. I'll teach you the names. Like, he's like that because he was with me on set for that entire week. And he was like, you're fine. Like, you don't need those names. I could teach them to you. So I would just say the stuff, if it's usually that stuff that is the most scary, like the technical and the what's the difference between a whip pan and a this. That's all teachable. If you know what your vision is, other people can help you with the names of things. Mm-hmm. So if you think it's something that you could be good at, you probably are. Advocate for yourself. Because the second I said it out loud, it like became real. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, no, I'm going to like fight to do this. Like, I want to do this. Mm. But I almost didn't say it out loud.
Mm-hmm. Ugh, I think it's so important. Like, everyone who's listening, remember that the technical stuff you can learn, because I think that is a very scary part about directing for the first time, be it television or a film.
Where your own short film.
Exactly. Oh, totally.
Very, very first thing.
Yeah. You think like, okay, like I literally before I directed my first short, I got the 4 C's of cinematography, which was super helpful. Like, but I mean, I could.
I'm like, what are they?
Character?
What are they?
Guys, I didn't finish the book.
No, but it is.
All the things you're still doing.
Yeah. And I think that honoring the story, when, you know, my coworkers who've become like dear friends of mine, there's like, we talk all the time about the movies we see or the TV shows we watch, it's just like a great conversation. And it always comes back to story. Yeah. It's like, well, the, you know, if you're going to throw around words like thesis, which I do often, it's like, well, the theme or the thesis was lost. Like, it was fun. It was this. Yeah. Like, I didn't really get the point, or like, the arc didn't happen or whatever. And like, there might be a fucking great, can we curse? It's our podcast. Yeah. It might be a great like shot, or the production design is beautiful, and all of that will still stand out and be great. But if it's not also telling a story where there's like an emotional connection or something to latch onto, it just doesn't have the same resonance.
No, I've heard there's like a thing where it's like, if you notice the directing, then chances are it like wasn't necessarily directed well. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, and that there's obviously exceptions.
Sure, sure.
Like, you're like studying it and you know,
yeah, if you're going to notice.
Yeah. And like, things are well directed. And I've said that, and I don't mean that like, but like, if you're like, if it's distracting from the story, chances are it's not honoring the story. And
it shouldn't make you think. It should only make you feel.
Yes.
Whatever they're trying to make you feel.
That's the same with every, like with the production design and with everything. It's like, they're all doing that. They're all honoring the story. If you're like, huh, like, look at that painting. And then that takes you out of the story. That's not a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, wow, that's like, you really feel like you're in their house. Like, it all comes back to story. And it all comes back to, yeah. And I would just say, it kind of goes back to what we were saying before of like, you just kind of have to like, when you had your first job and it's like, this, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, just make your film, do your thing.
No one knows.
No one knows anything.
No.
You just get nice people around you that you can be like, hey, I'm going to ask you some really dumb questions.
Yeah.
That are probably not even dumb.
And like, be okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can't learn if you don't do it. Like, you just can't. So do it. And like, you will learn so much. It will be probably way better than you think it will be. You'll have fun. You'll like grow. Like, there's no, it's a win-win.
Yeah, it's a win-win, and failure is never as bad as you think it is, and it never stings as long as you think it will, you know, like, it's just so worth it. I'm curious, before we get into our game, which is the last part of our episode, as Robert has kindly reminded us, is there a movie or TV show that like you watched, or like even a person, like I was obsessed with Mindy Kaling when I was in college, like because she was writing on The Office and then had her own show. Like, is there someone that you were like, I love that piece of work, or I love that person's career, that you wanted to emulate, or that you just were inspired by?
I have a really weird one.
Love that.
Yes. It's Danny DeVito.
Incredible.
The Ultimate Daddy.
God, I love him.
Matilda was like my favorite movie when I was growing up. And I remember my mom saying he was in it. He played Matilda's dad. I think directed it. He did the voiceover. He maybe wrote it. He did a lot of things with Matilda. We can fact check.
Did he direct it?
He did. Vika, tell it out.
Yeah. Do something.
He directed it. And well, obviously he didn't write it.
Okay.
But he directed it. Okay. So
That's magical. My
like 8-year-old self or whatever was watching Matilda, and I was like, wait, the guy who's in it also directed it. And he was also the voiceover, which like wasn't supposed to be from like Matilda's dad perspective. It was like a sort of omniscient. And to me, it was like, I was like, oh my God, he's doing it all. Like, I wanted to do that. I remember watching Matilda and being like, not even really having the words, because again, it took me a while to sort of realize that was a job. But I was like, he's in it, but he also helped make it.
Yeah.
And now I'm not really a performer anymore, but just like this idea of like, of putting your whole, putting so much passion into something and doing, and like really seeing it through and like being there for it. And Danny DeVito, I was like, I want to do what he did in Matilda. Like, I want, and now I think my equivalent is like writing and directing.
I love that.
Instead of like acting and directing. But yeah, mine is Danny DeVito.
Love that answer so much.
Thank you so much.
I don't know if anything could ever beat that.
Yeah.
But also just understanding, yeah, that you can be multiple things at once. Like, that's okay. You know, I think we're even still in this era where the multi-hyphenate is like just coming into
being
normal, you know, like for so long people are like, but which one do you want to do more? And I'm like, but you know what, that's not really fair.
Right you contain multitudes, and that's what makes you good. One thing makes you better at the other, makes you better at the other. And it's like, we shouldn't have to be put in a box with the medium that we do or the kind of work we do. Like, I've been saying I'm a comedy writer. I'm working on pitching a drama, like a full And I supervised one that already sold. Like, I'm kind of like, when people are like, do you do comedy or drama? I'm like, I don't know. I tell stories that I like. Stories.
Yep.
I love that. Okay, so we're going to play a game of rapid fire. But before that, I feel like the subheading of this podcast could be, but like how? Yeah. So we know you figured out so much because, hello, look at your beautiful resume and like the wonderful advice you've given so far. Is there like one thing that comes to mind, something you wish you had known as you were getting started?
There's like a million. I think the biggest thing is I wish I had known to like take a breath. I think if I could say anything to your listeners, who I'm sure a lot of them are listening because they are very similar to me and you guys, where it's like, we have a want, we have a passion and we want to do it. And it's like, take a breath. What, like, not to be like woo woo about it, but if you, it's going to be okay. I was going to say, what is meant for you will not miss you. It's like you, the thing that will ultimately like get you quote success or get you like money or get you like your foot in the door is going to be you being you, and the time you spend holding your breath and being so anxious is taking away from your like you-ness. So take a breath, like revel in the glory that is who you are. Go out with some friends and have some fun. I promise, like, this industry is in a very weird place right now, but it's going to happen. Like, don't just like breathe and like take care of yourself. And I wish that like, because I talked about mental health, but it took me a long time to get there. And I wish that I had breathed a little more coming up.
Breathing is so nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's necessary.
Yeah, one must.
And now for a section of not breathing. For any game of rapid fire. So say the first thing that comes to mind. Okay, and the clock starts now.
Guilty pleasure show.
Oh, I hate that. I don't like the word guilty pleasure. Gossip Girl original.
Ooh. Oh, your drink of choice doesn't have to be alcoholic.
Drink of choice. This is, sorry, I'm not being rapid fire.
It's fine.
I put a lot of pressure on. I'm sorry, I said I didn't like the word guilty pleasure. I just think it implies.
Oh, I agree.
Chick flicks and things for women are. You know, guilt, something we should feel guilty about.
No, I think some of those are
too hot to handle. Incredible television.
Oh, wait, you should watch that.
Selling Sunset. Woo! Incredible television.
I will check it out. Favorite thing to drink. I'll say what my favorite thing in college was, because it like defined me in college. It was a Shirley Temple with vodka.
Oh, I love that.
I like that. It's sweet,
but also a little spicy.
Yeah. Dirty Shirley, baby.
Movie or TV show that you wish you wrote.
Legally Blonde.
Oh, great.
So good.
Okay. Do you have a favorite quote?
Oh, in general or from Legally Blonde?
No, well, honestly,
both now. I mean, every line of Legally Blonde. I wish I could just like pull out a quote that also like summed up my life philosophy.
What, like it's hard?
Yeah. Well, like it's hard. That's my favorite quote. I'll also, I'm like going back to times in my life. This is so corny, but my senior year yearbook quote was from this Charles Mee play. And it was literally just do what you love, which is like, I mean, it's
love it though.
Do what you love.
Yeah.
You what like it's hard and do what you love.
And breathe.
And breathe.
The basics.
What can you not leave home without? Everything is like so depressing. I was like, my pepper spray, because it's scary out there.
That is so real.
So sorry.
So real.
I have that in my car too.
And if you don't have pepper spray, get some.
Get some. They sell it. You can have it on a little key. I have a cute little purple keychain.
Don't accidentally put it in the washing machine. I did.
No.
It didn't like break. I didn't know if that was correct. I'm like, yeah, it could break. But yeah, it was okay. But then I took it out and I was like, does it still work? And I sprayed it myself.
Oh, no.
No, no, no.
Oh, no. I definitely was like at Target, like Googling like how to use pepper spray to like test it to see if I should buy it. Like,
Be safe and be careful.
Like, please be careful. Do not
put your weapon down.
Ma'am.
I'm like, it's bubblegum pink.
Mine's pink too.
Mine's purple actually, but I had a pink one that I couldn't figure out, so I had to get the purple.
Well, clearly I couldn't figure mine out either.
I wonder if we had the same pink one.
And then I called my best friend and was like, what do I do? And she was like, I can't help you.
No, it's
that's gonna be the next podcast episode.
Yeah. How do you use your pepper spray?
While also being fashionable.
Yeah. But like it's hard.
Okay. Movie snack of choice.
Oh, popcorn with M&M's.
Mm. Movie you watched a million times, it could watch a million more times. That's not Legally Blonde.
I know. It was my first thought. Honestly, and I was so lucky to be able to work for her, it's The Devil Wears Prada.
That was the last question.
Oh my God. I'm sorry the beginnings were not rapid fire. I got thoughtful.
You got thoughtful.
There are no rules here.
There's no rules. I just was like, I'm going to change up the tempo.
No, I love it. I love it. It made me really in it.
Yeah, now I have adrenaline. It doesn't take that much. Okay, do you have anyone you want to shout out or anything you want our audience to know? Like, where can they follow you? Any project you want them to watch?
I mean, there's so many people I want to shout out. I would say I'm in like an amazing group of Latina TV writers. There's something called La Lista. It lists like all of them. It's like, you can get it if you're staffing a show. You can get it if you're like looking for a writer to supervise. I would want to shout out all, like, I think there's like 200 something of us now. I want to shout out all of La Lista, really, really amazing women. And there's like, we're here. And also like so many other people who are amazing. That was just my rapid fire thought.
Cool. Yeah.
And yeah, you can follow me. I don't have Twitter anymore. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Lawnstagram. I made it as a joke in 2012 and here we are.
It's perfect.
It's perfect. Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom and just being so like honest with us and our audience. It's invaluable. We're so grateful to you.
We talked about antidepressants.
We got there.
We went there.
Daddies, we went there.
We went there.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find Not Your Daddy's Films at our website, notyourdaddysfilms.com, on Instagram and TikTok at NYDFilms. And you can tune back in here for the next episode. Thanks so much. Bye, daddies. Bye, daddies.
That was so fun.
It was so fun.
Oh, I really think I just learned so much.
Well, no.
Daddy Dailies is presented by Not Your Daddy's Films, a social impact organization dedicated to educating and empowering women and non-binary creatives in TV and film. If you like what you heard today, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a positive review. If you want more daddy episode insights and links to what we talked about, join us on Patreon.com/NYDFilms. Daddy Dailies is produced in partnership with Robert Bailey and edited by Carly Tamarin, Fika Stubblebine, Claudia Restrepo, and Gracie Strauss. See you next time, Daddy.